Hi, I'm Trevor Lennon, and I'm on my way to the game tonight listening to Wiener's Barbecue on CITR.
Ozzy with one out. Took a ball just outside. Cardinals have left 10 men on, and they left a lot of men on early. Had a runner at third, nobody out in the first and didn't score. Second and third, one out in the second and didn't score. Smith corks one into right down the line.
Everybody, welcome to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Lots to get to on the show. We're going to have Milan Dragicevic, the head coach from the UBC Thunderbirds men's hockey team. He's waiting on the line. We'll get to coach in a second. Also on the show today, some hockey talk, NHL hockey talk, that is, as our Vancouver Canucks are having some troubles. We'll be talking to Dave Chernochan from News 1130. We'll be doing some baseball. We'll be doing some football. Lots to go on with today. But to get things going, we have with us the head coach of the UBC Thunderbirds men's hockey team, Milan Dragicevic, coming off a split on the weekend versus the Lethbridge Pronghorns. That's how they will end the 2006 portion of their schedule. They lost 6-2 on Friday, didn't play good, came back on Sunday, won 6-3 in their highest scoring conference game of the year. So Coach Dragicevic with us online right now. Coach, your thoughts on the weekend. You had a bad game and you had a good game.
We had a bad game on Friday. We didn't capitalize on any of our opportunities. Our power play went 0-for-8. We just couldn't score.
And
you know, that was the biggest thing. We couldn't score early, and we got frustrated again. And our power play wasn't clicking on Friday.
Coach, what do you say about your hockey team, though? I mean, they have done it all year. They didn't play a good game on Friday night, but then they came back and played one of their better games of the year, maybe their best game of the year offensively, you tell me, on Sunday. You got to be happy with the way they were able to bounce back.
Well, you know, Darryl, we've been bouncing back all year. Our biggest problem is our lack of consistency. It seems that we play one really good game on the one very average game on the weekend, and on Friday was a poor game. On Sunday, we generated a lot of offense. Our forwards were supporting the defense, and our transition game was great. We scored two power play goals, and that was the difference. And if you look at our history, the games that we've played well in, we've scored power play goals, we've done a good job on the penalty kill, and we've also scored three or four goals. And that's been the difference, and that's been the telling tale of our whole
Well, Coach, tell us what happened Friday night. 0-for-8 on the man advantage. You gave up a shorthand. You gave up two shorthanded goals, I believe it was on Friday. One was an empty netter, so that was quite the disaster from a special teams perspective. Lethbridge was a very decent 1-for-4 on the power play. I mean, those are not good numbers. What happened with your team, special team wise, Friday night?
Well, our specialty teams have kind of been in disarray, I'd say, for the last couple of weeks, and especially offensively. And when you start second guessing what you're doing on the ice when you have the puck, you start trying to compensate and try to do too much, and that's when the frustration level sets in. On our penalty kill, right now we're still at 85.5%, which is second best in Canada West. But it's the power play where we're struggling at right now. And we really try to simplify things for Sunday, get the puck to the middle of the net, the slot, and just jam away. And that's how we score two power play goals on Sunday.
And, Coach, you have two very good goalies who you like to rotate around throughout the season. You have liked to have rotated around, it seems, throughout the season so far. Francois Thouault, who I thought was the number one guy coming into the weekend at least, doesn't have a good game on Friday, lets in 5 goals. Obviously, you weren't too happy with his performance. Gary Festa, who was your number one guy last year, comes in on Sunday and plays a very good game. Couldn't have asked for much more from him on Sunday. What's your goaltending situation going into the new year?
Well, we want one of these goaltenders to step up and rise to the challenge and really become the number one guy. And 4 games ago, Francois was leading the Canada West in goals against and save percentage. Then he took a shellacking against Alberta a couple weeks ago. And we gave him that opportunity against Lethbridge again, and the team in front of him didn't play very well. Jerry Festa came in and really played well against Lethbridge on Sunday. So we want one of these guys to take the bull by the horns and be the starter, and both of them have been given the opportunity. And it's just a matter, we'll see what happens after the new year to see who practices well and who's going to play against Calgary.
Coach, that's who you'll start against in the new year. Let's talk about where you sit in the standings. 16 games. You have 15 points. It's a logjam in the Canada West. 4th place to 7th, separated by 2 points. Manitoba's played 18 games. You and Regina have both played 16. Lethbridge has only played 14. But is it realistic? Is this your goal in the second half? Is it to make the playoffs? Is it to play well? Or is it to overtake, probably, I assume, Calgary for home ice advantage in the first round of the playoffs? Is that your goal? Your main goal is to overtake Calgary?
Yeah, we play Calgary 4 times in the second half. And right now they are 5 points ahead of us. And we're not happy with our record. All right. And I'll be up front, and I've told the players that being 7-8-1 with our skill level, it's not good. But we control our own destiny by playing Calgary 4 times in the second half. Also in the second half, we play 8 road games, which I think we're a way better team on the road than we are at home. And that's proven by our record this year. So that's a good thing. To go on the road and play 8 games out of 12 on the road, we're happy with that. So we feel that we can compete with Calgary. And with our road schedule being the way it is, our primary goal is to finish ahead of Calgary and play in Vancouver for a home playoff berth. We have to do that. And that's been our goal since the start of the year, is to finish first. Alberta is running away with the division. That might be out of reach right now, but to finish second is not out of reach.
So, Coach, UBC, of course, you're going to be playing Calgary to start the season, but I would like to start the new year, but I would like to get on some of the players on your team right now. Big weekend from, where do you put them? Your second or your third line? You tell me. You had a great weekend. These guys had struggled all year. Lance Morrison got his first goal. Ashley Todd, who was pointless going into the weekend, I think he had 3 points. John Kress was their line mate. He had a good weekend. Had to be very nice for you to see those guys playing good and contributing points and goals to your squad on both Friday and Sunday.
Well, as you know, goal scoring has been a serious problem for our hockey team, especially when you have your top two out of three, goal point guys are your defensemen. So when you have that line, and you have a line that's playing well and contributing and skating, and playing with energy like Morrison's line did, that is, it kind of rubs off on the other players where they see them having success by cycling the puck and working hard and creating turnovers. That makes the other lines want to do the same thing too. So those three guys we're definitely going to keep together. I see some chemistry in them because they're all very similar. They all work hard. They all have good shots. And they're all tenacious on the forecheck. And that's what I like. And now we just got to get the other three lines going and getting them on the same page as we do have a Morrison line.
And last question, Coach. Guy who hasn't had a great first 16 games in CIS hockey, but he really seemed to be coming around on the weekend. I think he only had 1 point, an assist for you guys, in Sunday's game. Mitch Bartley looked real good on Friday, had about three chances, hit a post on Sunday. He seems to be coming around for your hockey team.
Yeah, you're right. He seems to just be starting to get it. Now he's, as you know, this league is such a, it's a different league than the Western Hockey League. It's a tough league to score at. He's had a lot of success in the Western Hockey League. And he's starting to figure out that when you jump to holes and when you work hard and you get to open areas, you get those opportunities. And it does take these guys a long time to figure that out. And he has been getting a lot of opportunities and a lot of shots. Those shots are going to go in because he's starting to figure out what this league's all about. We have no qualms with problems with Mitch Bartley. He's going to be a great player for us. And all our first-year players are going to be so much better in the second half just because of the experience that they're going through in the first half.
And, you know, things haven't gone great for you in the first half, but you're still right in the thick of things. So you have to be satisfied with all that's gone wrong. You're still doing pretty good. That has to at least comfort you.
Well, the comforting part is that we're 5 points behind second place. And I guess the other positive is the fact that this has been our best record in a long time. And I don't know what our record's been the last 20 years, but being 7-8-1 is nothing to brag about, but it has been our best record in many years to start with. So we want to continue, get on the upswing, get everyone really healthy, and really make a push for it in the second half.
Terrific, Coach. And just from my perspective, tell me if I'm being fair here. I think it is officially your best record in about 20 years, but you didn't have the shootout wins. You didn't get the points for the overtime losses back then. So I have trouble reading these best with the way the points are handed out in these leagues nowadays, and in the NHL, all through hockey. It was harder to get points back then.
Well, no question it is, but you're absolutely right. But it's also the same for every other team.
But more teams, or everybody's getting those points now. 500's not what 500 used to mean.
No, you're right. But it's the same for every team in this league. You know, just our hockey team is not excluded. All teams are getting more points, and
yeah,
that's just the reality of hockey. And we feel that we have a very good hockey team, regardless of our record. Over the last 4 years, if you look at the past performance, we've always been a second-half team, and we've always been a lot better in the second half. And we expect nothing to change.
Awesome.
In January.
Awesome. Milan Dragicevic, thanks for doing this, head coach of the UC Thunderbird hockey team. Next home game's back at GM Place January 13th and 14th versus the Regina Cougars. Mike and I will be there, Coach, and enjoy your, I don't know what you guys are doing so much, but enjoy your holiday, okay?
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Coach. All right, that was Milan Dragicevic, head coach of the UBC Thunderbird men's hockey team, and we went down there. Mike Wall and I were down there for both games at General Motors Place on Friday and Sunday. I had a busy weekend here at CITR Radio. I did the game on Friday, color with Mike, game on Sunday, which was awesome. The color game on Sunday with Mike. Well, you know, I prefer Sunday afternoon. We were down there at GM Place. That was cool. The weather's not that good. It's kind of cold. It's a Sunday. I mean, me personally, when I get out of bed on Sunday, I'm watching football, if anything. So no qualm off my back doing a game on Sunday, and it was pleasurable, and the team played very well, and that was fun. Saturday, got to do the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball game, at War Memorial Gym, and that was a heck of a game for the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team. 78-73 winners over the Victoria Vikes, and what a game this was coming in. UBC ranked number 2 in the country. Victoria ranked number 3 for a game at the beginning of December in CIS basketball. This is a matchup that's all you can ask for. Two perfect record teams, rivals, going at it, number 2, number 3 in the country, and UBC came out on top 78-73. In the game for the Thunderbirds, Casey Archibald, their star, he's their leader, he's their scorer, 27 points in the second half, 23 points overall. The score was closer, really, than it actually was. Vic got some points late to make it respectable, but it was about an 8 or a 9-point UBC win. And where I give them credit is they also covered the spread on the weekend. I put it at a plus four. I had Victoria plus 4. I had UBC slotted in as a 4-point favorite. And that's something I'm actually thinking about doing. Maybe putting it up on a website somewhere, has come up with UBC Thunderbird spreads. So I think sports gambling's great. That's me personally. I don't want players throwing it or style. I don't think it'll go there. I think, you know what? Sports gambling's great. I'm for it. I'm for it. Anyways, folks, lots to get to on Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio. We got to have Dave Chernichan from News 1130. Dave is going to be with us at about 5 o'clock to talk about the Vancouver Canucks and lots that's going on in the National Hockey League. 5:30, we're going to go to Las Vegas. If he's there, BJ Bass is going to be with us to talk about National Football League. And we did it last week, and I'm a big fan of it. We're going to get into some U.S. college football talk because you got the BCS was just announced. And people are raving that Florida got in and Michigan didn't. And people would have been raving the other way if Michigan got in and Florida didn't. It's great radio. It's great talk. It's great writing, print, as they say. And I'm a big fan of the whole U.S. college football system. It's going to be a heck of a Rose Bowl, hell of a Rose Bowl. On January 1st, you're going to have the Pac-10 playing the second-place team from the Big Ten, Michigan. And it's going to be USC versus Michigan. Might be better than the championship game. We'll ask BJ about that when the time comes. But back to that UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team on Friday night. This is a team now sitting at 11-0. And I was fortunate enough to bump into Jim Robson on Sunday. Michael Wall and I doing the game. We saw Jim Robson, and what a nice fellow. What a guy. And he was telling us basketball stories that he did back in the 1984 Olympics. How he was in L.A., and he had to watch over like a 10 or a 12-day period, 92 basketball games. He had to watch every game. He called the Canada games, and CBC every once in a while would call him up, and he'd have to, you know, do like a little two-minute report on TV about what was going on, and he watched 92 basketball games. Because I go to him, I go, do you ever do basketball? And he goes, sure, I did basketball. And it was just so nice talking to him because he was at the Canuck game on Saturday night. And I go to him, and all he wanted to talk about was the UBC team, the UBC basketball team. So Jim Robson, then he told us, I think might have been the first broadcasting job he had. I'm not sure. He used to do play-by-play up in Port Alberni. And for all you basketball nuts out there who are interested, Elgin Baylor. One of the greatest basketball players who has ever lived, played two games in Port Alberni. That's all the information I have. It doesn't get any more detailed than that, but Elgin Baylor played two games in Port Alberni. Back to the UBC team, though, looking real good. Jim Robson asked me, actually, are they better than last year's team that went 20-0 in the regular season, Canada West Pacific Division playoff champions? Didn't sweep through that, though. They won 4-5, lost a game to Victoria in the playoffs, and then they lost to Victoria in the Canada West Championship final game, and then they lost in the first round of the National Championship Tournament. So that was not a playoff team. I think you can safely say that, fairly or unfairly, when push came to shove, they lost their biggest games of the year. They you know, two biggest games of their year, they lost. And that's a stigma on that team, 20-0 regular season or not. I mean, we're grading them at their at the highest possible level here. But this team is better than last year's team. From what I've seen, last year's team was so entertaining. And you had the two superstars on last year's team, Pasha Baines and Casey Archibald. And they were just going to hit the floor, and they were going to outscore you by 20 points. This team has not seemed like it's as dominant to me as that team was. I think if that team was on its A game, this team would have troubles playing it. But I think this team, from what I've seen so far, is a more complete basketball team. I Adam Friesen, class individual, playing the point guard position. I think Chris Dixon, excellent pickup from the University of Manitoba. He's been doing great for them at the other guard position. They're going with basically a three-guard set. Casey is just having an all-world season for the UBC Thunderbirds. Might be the top player in Canada this year. I mean, he has been that good. Still not convinced. I mean, they played real good on the weekend, but I'm still not convinced about these guys down low who D'd up great against Victoria on the weekend. But Bryson Cool, doing well, but we're going to find out later as the season goes on. Cody Berg, the big body, great job against Graham Ballinger and Jacob Dirksen of the University of Victoria. Their big men held the 12 points, and they're averaging just under 30 combined during the season. They're held the 12 points total, 12 by Dirksen, 0 by Graham Ballinger, who's just a shade under 15 this year. So, and Sean Stewart played really good for him defensively, also in the post. And I think the tough part is with this team, where even if this team goes 20-0 this season, we're not going to be able to compare them till it's the playoffs. It's really that simple. This team runs the table, and I'm guessing they won't. That's unfortunately where I would bet is they're going to have to go to Victoria January 19th and 20th. And Victoria did not play their best game on the weekend. I thought UBC played very well, especially in the second half. But I think if Victoria, in the games in January in UVic, they're going to be playing two games against them. You know, if you've got Ballinger's going to be better. Victoria was dreadful from the free throw line on Saturday night. You know they're going to be better at that. UBC might even be worse from the free throw line. They were like 67%, 68% on Saturday, and they're 64 in the year. So that's really where UBC's sitting. And if Victoria had shot their free throws on the weekend, it's a different ball game. It's a different ball game. So I think they're going to have a lot of trouble with Victoria this year. I think you're going to see some great games between UBC and Victoria, but I'd be very surprised and very impressed for sure if UBC was able to go to the island, take on Victoria, and sweep them January 19th, January 20th. But, hey, if this team can then go on a little playoff run, win the Canada West Championship, win some games at Nationals, you know, even if they go 18-2 or 19-1, I say you'll have to say they're a better team than last year's team. So it's basically we'll find out in the playoffs. All right. We are going to take one other break here on Wieners Barbecue, 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, Canada. We will be right back in a moment.
Once upon a time, a long, long time ago, wherever you'd lead me, I would surely follow. Girl, you put me through some pain and misery, and now you are standing on my doorstep telling me how much you need me. Baby, ain't nobody home. Times I begged for you to come home, but you laughed at me and said, let me alone. Through my burning tears, I saw you walk away, and now you're begging me to forgive you. But this time, baby, it's your turn to pay. Baby, ain't nobody. Girl, I
guess I don't give a damn about your dreams.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's new?
Sorry?
What's new?
Vegas, baby.
All right, with us right now, BJ Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas. Did you like the Bob Dylan intro today?
We're getting there. We're getting there.
We're getting there. Improvement. You knew not to insult Bob Dylan, hey?
At least it wasn't Shatner.
What are the odds right now of the Vancouver Canucks winning the Stanley Cup? What's the general sportsbook action on that one?
You want me to guess? 35-1.
Sucker bet or what? Have you been watching any of this?
Of course. It's always the betting the Canucks for the Stanley Cup is always a sucker bet. I mean, they've been in the league, what, 30 years?
36. I think this is actually 36.
So if I would have made that bet every year, would I still be getting paid? No.
Damn straight. All right, BJ Bath with us. From Nevada, Las Vegas, we're going to get into some National Football League and some football talk in general right now. BJ, let's hop in.
Hey, you know, Daryl, before we start, what? You know, obviously, you know, we talk about the NFL, we talk about football,
yeah.
We talk about players, teams, all that kind of stuff. And every now and then we'll talk about, you know, sports wagering, or I'll bring up a point of, you know, last week, for example, I thought Dallas would win, but I like taking the Giants as a betting man, as a wagering man. Do you know that the last that I've given your listeners five picks, five sports wagering picks, and all five of them have won this year?
You're 5-for-5?
It goes back to Florida beating Arkansas, college pro. I mean, I'm giving your listeners gold here, baby. Gold, Jerry. It's gold.
You called Florida Arkansas, hey?
I didn't. I gave you what, the Chiefs on Thanksgiving. I gave you the Bengals the week after. I mean, come on now.
Well,
your listeners are making money listening to your show.
BJ, let's start, actually, okay? Let's start with U.S. college football, all right?
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah, the matchups on the weekend, the bowls are now set. But were you watching U.S. college football on the weekend? Were you all over this?
Sure, of course.
Okay, what happened? Why did USC lose to UCLA, first of all? What happened there?
Well, I mean, listen, it was rivalry week, USC, UCLA. Two teams that hate each other because of their close proximity and perception in Southern California. And, it was a rivalry game, and I think USC may have been a little bit high on the horse and maybe looking past UCLA a little bit. They'd started getting a lot of hype that, they had jumped Michigan in the polls, that they were number two, that they're going to be playing Ohio State for the national championship. And they met a team in UCLA that was grounded. They knew their season was done. All they were playing for was pride, and what they were playing for was to prevent USC from going to that game. And they were just a little bit hungrier, and they needed what they needed. They needed to get that. They needed to do what they needed to do, and they did it to win. You know what I mean?
And that was it. So national championship picture is now set in U.S. college football. I like the bowl system. I like the regular season. I like the insanity of it. I love how the regular season means everything in U.S. college football. This is one of the rare years, actually, where a one-loss team does, in fact, make it to the national championship game. I think it was 2 years ago. Was it Auburn went undefeated and didn't even make it to the national?
And didn't even make it.
And didn't even make it. So this year, it's a complete mess. You have Ohio State undisputed in the national championship game, but it's the voting that kind of gets to me, BJ, and how it was done. Florida is now in the national championship game over Michigan. I actually agree with that, but I read Jim Tressel of Ohio State didn't vote. I read one voter had Florida above Ohio State, probably just because he thought Florida should be in and he's going to get them as much points as possible. It's the politics. It's the way people strategize their votes that I don't like from what I read there. Jim Tressel voting?
He can't change that. That's the thing is, coaches are supposed to be voting. What came out a couple of years ago is the fact that most of the coaches don't even vote themselves, that the athletic director at the university is voting. Makes no sense. I mean, it's asinine. I mean, every single coach in Division I football has a vested interest in this. So why should they have a say in the outcome? It doesn't really make much sense to me.
Well, the polls, though, I mean, there's pretty much, I don't know, they seem to work. I doubt there's conspiracy going on. You think there is, but I just think Jim Tressel not voting, and I think if a coach is not caught voting, you find that school like $100,000 or something like that. These coaches
I'm not saying it's a conspiracy in the grand scheme of things that 30 coaches got together and all voted for somebody in some position. But the fact that Jim Tressel is not voting, I mean, isn't that a conspiracy? Isn't that prove the issues with the system? I mean, Darryl, let me tell you something. If you like the bowl system, you're the only person in the planet that likes the bowl system. It makes absolutely no sense. Go to a 16-team playoff. I mean, it's the only way that makes it fair. I mean, okay, so listen, I agree with you. I believe Florida should be number two. I believe that we talked about this last week, that if they could beat Arkansas, if they could win the SEC, they could make it through that conference with only one loss, they deserve to play Ohio State for the national championship. Michigan had their chance. They lost. They couldn't do it. What's the point in those two teams playing again? So they play again. Michigan wins. They're still not they're not the national champion. They've then split with Ohio State. So then what? You're tied for national champ. It doesn't make any sense the way that they do that. I mean, and then the other thing being, USC, you're right when you say the regular season means everything, but a loss at the end of the regular season means a whole lot more than a loss at the beginning of the regular season. And that's what doesn't make sense. It needs to be weighted evenly throughout.
Yeah, but Florida, who'd they beat? They beat Arkansas. They beat LSU? Who beat Florida?
Auburn. Auburn.
Okay, they beat LSU. They beat Tennessee, who's a top 20 team. They beat LSU, who's going to a BCS game.
But, Darryl, this is my thing, is that if Florida would have been undefeated and they would have lost to Arkansas, then they wouldn't be number two right now because they lost on the last week of the season. But as it is, they lost in week four or week five, so everyone had a chance to forget about that loss. That's what doesn't make sense.
The 16-team playoff, though, you're going to have to cut the regular season down, and there's no way that'll ever happen. Because you're taking eight schools are going to get these 16 schools are going to make lots of money playing these extra games. The bowl system will be just destroyed, and you're going to have about 100 schools that have to cut their schedules by about two or three games. It's never going to happen.
Listen, whether it's cutting the schedules, whether it's expanding the season, I'm not pretending to have all of the answers.
BJ,
quite frankly, it's not my job to. But you know what? Find a way to make it work. Find a way. Find a way where it's fair for everybody. Find a way where everybody has an opportunity to make money. Not the top 10 teams in the league, or not the top two leagues in Division One. I mean, it's asinine. I mean, it's absolutely asinine. So look at Michigan. Michigan got jumped by Florida because Michigan didn't play this week.
Yeah, but if
Michigan would have played, if they would have won, would that have changed the outcome? Who knows?
But they started earlier. They started their season earlier, Michigan. And maybe the Big Ten has to have a championship. SEC, you're right. The SEC does that thing where they have a SEC championship game, right?
Absolutely.
So I guess that I don't know.
Well, I would say, you know, the Big 12 has the same thing. The Pac-10 has the same thing. So about half the divisions out there have that.
No, the Pac-10 doesn't have
it. The other half don't.
The Pac-10 doesn't have a championship game.
But, well, and you know, if the Big Ten had a championship game, who would be playing in it?
Ohio State and Michigan, or would it be Wisconsin? Because they're 10-1
well,
too.
And then again, another team that gets left out of the mix. So, anyways, you know, I just think the system is garbage. The BCS is garbage. You know, no one's happy with it. So, you know, the funny thing is that, you know, now that we're 6 to 8 years, whatever it is, into this BCS, and everyone's, you know, seen the problems, and you have all these teams that have gotten burned by it, is, you know, as these older guys die off, as, you know, not to sound morose, but, you know, guys like Bo Schembechler, as, you know, they pass away and they move on, or they're out of football, and the younger guys and the ex-players take these coaching positions, they're going to remember getting burned. And so I think that, you know, as, you know, the generational gap shifts in college football, in coaching, in the athletic director level, you're going to see a lot more complaining about this on a yearly basis. You know, it's gotten worse every single year, and it's going to continue to get worse every single year. Again, I brought up Boise State as the argument for that, an undefeated team that will never make a BCS bowl game in the way that the
system
is set up.
They did make a BCS. They did.
And I still think that's, you know, that's a great example.
They did make a BCS bowl game, Boise State. They're in the Fiesta Bowl.
I mean, like, dude, give them a chance.
Oh,
what can they do?
For the national championship.
They can finish fifth.
Yeah, pretty much. So put a ranked team on your schedule, though. Go try to play at Notre Dame.
Well, but then you know, that's where other problems come into play, and it's kind of what we're seeing now in basketball a little bit. You know, the mid majors. You know, after Gonzaga, you know, the mid major is now a major player in NCAA basketball. And so what you have is you have teams that don't want to go on the road, that don't want to go into places like, I don't know, Butler, George Mason, you know, the Holy Cross. You know, no one wants to play these guys during the regular season because they know they can get beat, and they know that it will affect their ranking. And not playing them doesn't affect their ranking, so why would they play them? And you know, what you have now is you have Division One schools playing regular season games with Division Two and Division Three teams.
Ugh, that's bad, actually.
Dude, UNLV played Washburn Community College in Topeka, Kansas this season. I mean, how does that make any effing sense?
And I guess if they go in, if UNLV goes into one of the smaller schools, Central Michigan. I don't know if they're big or not, but if they go in
right.
and play
well,
Central.
Kent State. I mean, you know the mid-major players.
Yeah, and if they win, who cares? Right?
Exactly. And they lose, it's huge.
Yeah, if they lose, it's a big time. Well, BJ, actually, before we get into the NFL, I would actually like to ask you this one here. There's an international bowl. I don't know if they've had this before in U.S. college football. It's going to be on January 6th as Western Michigan is going to be playing Cincinnati in Toronto.
Okay.
In Toronto. Now, you're from Vancouver, and you've been down there in the States, and I don't know how much you know about this, but there's talk, and serious talk, that this school right here, UBC, will be going NCAA Division One.
Huh.
There is serious talk, because it's a great academic institution here, so the U.S. schools like that, and they're getting a new hockey rink here. And it's going to be for basketball, too. It might even be the nicest arena in North America when it's built. We don't know. We haven't seen it yet. But they're building it right on campus, and it's going to be for the Olympic hockey that's not the big games. You're not going to have here. You're not going to have the States probably isn't going to be here. You're going to have, like, the Czechs. You're going to have, like, the Czechs are going to play the Finns here. I mean, it's going to be big games. It's not the Team Canada
Kazakhstan
games.
Kazakhstan versus Germany.
Well, you're going to have that, sure, but you're also going to have, like, you know, Slovakia is going to probably play Russia here. You're going to get games like that. So it's going to be – it's made for the Olympics. The school's paying for it. The government's paying it. They're getting this arena here at UBC. Now, just tell us, because you're down there, and you're in UNLV, which is – but you watch a lot of college sports down there. UNLV, besides basketball, not the biggest sports school that I know of, at least. But right. You got the Thomas and Mack Center. You have your football team down there. Canada, we got a U.S. college game up there, a bowl game in Toronto. Do you think it would work up here, and what are we in for if it does?
As far as and what, they're talking about playing Division I football?
That's the one that's being held out, actually, I think. But I don't know if you've heard this guy, Greg Kerfoot, is trying to build a soccer stadium down in Gastown, which will be a world-class soccer facility of about 20,000, 30,000 seats. That's where I'm thinking the team would play if they did decide to go down the road. And they're actually talking about going into the WAC conference. That's the conference they'd be in.
Right.
So what do you...
I'll tell you what, it's really interesting. I think there's probably some logistical issues that come into play having to cross the border.
That's what it is. That's what it is. They're gonna have to change the bylaw to allow a Canadian school in.
Sure. And then on the flip side, I mean, you know, listen, if they're going to start, who's in the WAC? Well, Fresno State, for example. You know, you look at Tarkanian was the coach there, and you have kids that maybe didn't have the best upbringing or the best background, may have criminal records, will not be allowed to cross the border. There's some logistical stuff like that. But I think it would be great. I think it would be fantastic. Didn't Simon Fraser? Weren't they playing? Were they playing in a division that was both Canadian and American?
NAIA, it's the same that the UBC baseball team plays in, and they're very successful at it, is the NAIA, and they tried to get into NCAA Division II, were denied, and I think personally, UBC, it's this whole thing, they got the stadium now.
Right.
They are going to have...
And then the other question being, I mean, you know, listen, is there enough talent, and is there good enough talent to compete at that level, which is extremely high, on an everyday basis, and be able to field a complete team of talented people. You know, obviously, there's been some tremendous athletes that have come out of UBC in recent years. Probably, you know, baseball being kind of the biggest sport. UNLV field a team of 15 baseball players that could compete with American colleges on an everyday basis. You know, look at some of the teams that are in the WAC. You have TCU. It's in Texas. I mean, Texas is a hotbed for athletes. I don't think that it can compare to Vancouver. That would be kind of my main question: is the talent there? And if it is, that would be fantastic.
Steve Nash has said that if UVic, and I assume he would have gone to UBC if they had an NCAA Division I team, he would not have gone to Santa Clara.
Makes sense.
So there you have it. You're going to have all the top athletes. You're going to lose your Jamal McGlures to Kentucky. You're not going to be able to keep them. But you're going to get, you're going to get everybody else. You're going to get all these guys. There's a kid that went to Kitsilano 2 years ago, Kendall, and he's now playing at Pittsburgh. You don't think he'd stay at UBC if they had an NCAA Div 1 team?
That would be very cool, very cool.
So there you have it. So anyways, that's on the list. All right, you ready for some NFL?
Let's roll, baby.
All right, let's roll with the NFL. BJ, the team I want to start off with, are they good or what's going on here? The Seattle Seahawks, you look up, Josh Brown, 4 game-winning field goals in the last minute this year. This one versus Denver, a 50-yarder. Is Seattle a legitimate 8-4 team and a legitimate Super Bowl contender?
I mean, listen. I don't know that they're necessarily a legitimate 8-4 team because they played so many games without their two best players. Are they a legitimate Super Bowl contender? Absolutely. You know, we had talked last week. You know, you asked me who I thought would come out of the NFC. I hadn't thought about it. Took a few moments. And actually came out with the answer Seattle. Huh. And you countered with, well, the Bears. You know, look at the way the Bears won on Sunday. They won by scoring a touchdown off a punt return. They won by scoring an interception for a touchdown. And they won by scoring a safety. That's 16 points, more than what Minnesota put up. So, you're looking at defense and special teams that won that game. Rex Grossman completed 6 passes for, what, 35 yards?
34. With three picks.
I mean, I don't see that. I don't see the Bears necessarily as a well-balanced football team. I think Grossman's going to continue to have some serious issues on the offensive side of the ball. And listen, how many games can your defense or your special teams really win for you? And Chicago has been doing it all year, with assistance like that. But once you get to the playoffs, it's a totally different ball game. Again, I think the fact that Hasselbeck and Alexander are rested, they've had weeks off. They're still warming up. I think that's why I like Seattle. If they can get hot, if they can continue to, win football games, gel as a team, get some momentum, get some chemistry going for what they're doing, I think they have a real chance. I really do.
Seattle stat, I think I heard this, in their last 21 regular season games, 18-3 with Hasselbeck and Alexander in the lineup.
It's pretty impressive.
So there you have it.
And obviously Brown is on point. I mean, in the number you said, 4 game-winning field goals, the field goal kicker is huge. And the fact that Brown is confident, that he's hitting his field goals, the team is confident in him. I just think this team is heating up right at the right time of the year, and that's why I said, I don't know that they're legitimately 8-4. I think that's probably a better record than they deserve, especially with the way that with some of those wins that they have on their record. But it doesn't matter how they got there; they're there, and now they're in a great position to win the division, to possibly get home field advantage in the playoffs. As you know, playing in Seattle is huge. The 12th man. That stadium, it's the stars could align. Everything could come together.
It is a rocking stadium when they're going. I was there for the playoff games last year. I don't know how it looked on TV or how it compared, but especially for that NFC Championship game, it was rocking. It was rocking.
I've been told by a reliable source who's actually personal friends with several members of the New York Giants, and the Giants came into Seattle for that big game. A couple months ago now. And I asked, is Seattle the hardest place to play? Is it the loudest place to play? They said, no, the loudest place and hardest place to play is actually in Minnesota. However, Seattle was a close second. And, it was actually Luke Pettigrew who said that, you're on that field and you can't hear anything, and it creates a great challenge for offenses to go in there, have to listen to snap counts, have to get in the huddle, have to call audibles at the line, and it can be extremely difficult.
Because didn't the announcer also, like the sideline reporter in the NFC Championship game, didn't they have to like go away from her because they just couldn't hear her, or was it?
Right. Well, and it's gotten so loud that teams are questioning if it's natural noise or if the Seattle organization is pumping noise into the stadium, which I can't really imagine that anyone can really take that seriously.
No.
But it's gotten to the point that they're even questioning that. That's a good thing for Seattle.
Talk about these two teams going at. Also, there's rumors Seattle might be getting an NHL team soon too. Just so you know that one.
Which interesting.
I mean,
Seattle's been a great minor league hockey city.
Yeah.
The tri-city. What is it? The
tri-city
teams. What is it? It's
Seattle
Spokane,
Thunderbirds.
Tacoma,
Seattle.
And Seattle.
Yeah.
Have been having battles for years and years and years. So that makes a lot of sense. Makes a whole lot more sense to me than Columbus or Tampa Bay.
Or Oklahoma City's actually been mentioned.
Yeah,
also.
Right.
Oh, no, that's basketball. A big matchup this weekend in the NFC. This is why football's so interesting. Is you told me I was going to want to watch this game at the beginning of the season. I would have laughed. New Orleans, who I think after their 38-10 win versus a pretty half-decent this year San Francisco 49er team, they've been pretty underappreciated. Going to take on Dallas, who had a tough one, but they got the win versus the Giants, 23-20. Martin Gramatica with the game-winning field goal. You're going to have them going at it. What do you think of Dallas and New Orleans wins on the weekend? 2 8-4 teams, a potential playoff preview here.
It's going to be a great game. The Saints are the little team that could. I think partially because they're the Saints, and we're all so used to seeing them lose or screw up. You're like almost waiting for it to happen. I kind of thought they might have had a really tough matchup against San Francisco, that they might have maybe got caught, looking ahead a little bit, and they came out and just smoked them. And really what you saw was a well-balanced offense from the Saints. Not Drew Brees throwing up 500 yards like we talked about a couple weeks ago. You had McAllister rushing for over 100. You had a very solid game from Drew Brees. You had Reggie Bush, catching balls and scoring touchdowns all over the field. The biggest question in New Orleans is the wide receivers. You know, you have Marcus Colston, who's injured, and now Joe Horn looks like he re-aggravated his groin. So, you know, you're going with some very young people and some very inexperienced people, wide receiver. You know, to me, it just kind of seems like it's going to catch up to them at some point. I'm not saying that it's going to be this week or next week. It just seems like they're going to get caught up to it. Listen, the Cowboys are on a roll. Tony Romo, the guy looks for real. The offense has really rallied around them. They're playing great football. It's going to be a great game. It really is.
Who are you taking then? We got the spread. Looking at my board here, Dallas by 6.5. I'm going to be taking the Saints in that one to cover in Dallas.
I will too, and I think that I'll actually wait till the end of the week, hoping that line moves to 7 and that I get the full touchdown.
Attaboy. And Reggie Bush, how about this guy? 37 yards on the ground, 9 catches, 131 yards, scores 3 touchdowns. I think he's pretty damn good, this guy.
Yeah, unbelievable. And I'll tell you, to me, the most telling play out of all of that was when he took he either took a draw play or a handoff or a little shuffle pass at, deep in their own end zone and ran. It was one where he was running and he fumbled the ball and he caught it and then had to run out of bounds because he had kind of lost control of the ball. Do you know what play I'm talking about?
No, I didn't see the game, actually.
So he showed this burst where he had gotten through about the first 40 yards, and it was like the safety and the DB were chasing him, and Reggie Bush just put it into it, dropped it into like 8th gear and was gone. And there was no way he could have been caught. Like I said, he actually fumbled the ball a little bit, ended up going out of bounds, wasn't a touchdown. But that burst and that separation, it's special, man. It's something you don't see from a lot of players. This guy is fast, man. He's the real deal. I mean, absolutely.
What the hell is Houston thinking? It's looking – what were they doing?
It was
money. I was told
Mario
it was
Williams
money.
Williams was having a good season. He got injured a little bit. You got to figure the way they're looking at it. They have Dominic Davis there already. Of course, the way that fate works out, Davis blows out his knee and, of course, doesn't play. I agree with you. What are you thinking? A guy this talented. And, New Orleans has been lining him up at wide receiver. A guy of that talent, I mean, you just got to pick him. I mean, how if you're not going to pick him, trade the pick away and get value for it rather than just, Mario Williams, defensive lineman. And I can't answer that question. I don't think anyone can because I don't think anyone knows what the hell they were thinking.
I heard it was money. Philadelphia 27-24 last night over the Carolina Panthers. How about those Eagles? They are somehow, you look up 6-6. They're in the wild card chase. Carolina blows another one late in the fourth quarter. Jeff Garcia, pretty good backup to have on your football team.
And, listen, we've seen Garcia get it done before, so it shouldn't really surprise anybody, that he looks good out there. And then, Philadelphia slowly but surely seemingly put together a very talented young wide receiver core with Stallworth and Brown Westbrook coming out of the backfield. We shouldn't be surprised that Garcia is doing good. I don't think the Eagles are going to make the playoffs. I think, that may have been kind of, their last gasp or really kind of win one at home on Monday night. They were trailing in that game, and they shouldn't have won. There was a phantom pass interference call that didn't get called on Keyshawn in the end zone. Ball gets intercepted, game over. Carolina has some huge issues. I don't know what they are. It's weird. I mean, watching that team, D'Angelo Williams had a huge game for them. Steve Smith, Jake Delhomme is a quarterback that's been proven successful in this league. It's weird to look at Carolina and really identify why they're having so many issues.
And moving on, I do want to ask you, we'll get to this now, actually. Moving on to the AFC, the big game last week for me was on Thursday, Cincinnati shutting down the Baltimore Ravens offense. They got the win there. I think, you know, everybody's talking about, is it going to be the Colts? Is it going to be the Chargers? Is it going to be the Patriots? Or who's the other team I'm missing up there? Patriots, Chargers, or the Ravens. But I think Cincinnati. They got Carson Palmer's heating up. Your boy Chad Johnson's on fire right now. They have the whole offense set. Cincinnati, and they shut down Baltimore. This is a team.
They're playing great defense.
And you do not want to play Cincinnati in the playoffs. I think they could win the whole AFC, actually. I don't know if they will, but they kind of remind me of Pittsburgh last year, the way they just got going at the end, won some road games. Before you know it, they're in the Super Bowl.
And out of all the teams that are kind of, you know, vying for playoff spots, you know, their schedule kind of looks a little bit easier than some of the other teams. Obviously, they have, you know, some really tough matchups. They have to play Indianapolis still, have kind of a weak matchup this week against Oakland. I think Baltimore is a little bit too far ahead of them. I don't think that they're going to catch Baltimore for the division. I think Baltimore is going to win that division, which will leave the Bengals looking for, with several other teams, for one of those wild card spots. But I would agree with you. I certainly wouldn't want to play them in the playoffs. You know, they're getting their stuff together. You know, beating Baltimore was huge. That was a huge win for them. And, you know, I think it's weird. Cincinnati is just a team that – one of those teams that has Baltimore's number. I mean, Baltimore's lost, what, three games all year, and two of them were to Cincinnati. It's just one of those teams that they match up really well against. But Cincinnati's playing great football, and I agree with you. I certainly wouldn't want to run into them in the playoffs. I agree with you. I think that they will make the playoffs. And I think that the other wild card team that's going to make the playoffs, and again, one of those things you never would have said at the beginning of the season, I think the New York Jets might make the playoffs.
New York Jets, 38-10 winners over the Green Bay Packers. Green Bay, you know, they've actually put up a fight this year, Green Bay. I give them a lot of credit. So you like the New York Jets, 7-5 on the season. The Bengals are 7-5. The Jacksonville, 7-5. Denver, 7-5. Kansas City, 7-5. You like the Jets, eh?
I do like the Jets. You know, I think Kansas City has a really tough schedule throughout the rest of the year. I don't think that they have what it takes to get it done. I think the Broncos are going to win that division. But obviously, you know, with Cutler now at quarterback, that could go the other way, and Denver could really just go down the tubes. I think only one team out of the West, or I guess, no, the Chargers are going to win that division.
That,
so really, you're then looking at one of them taking a wild card. The Jets' schedule is really easy throughout the rest of the year. They don't really play very tough teams. I think it's definitely going to be on them to screw it up. You know, they're a weird team. They just keep winning. No one really knows how. And, you know, you go into Green Bay, you go into Lambeau, you know, and seeing Brett Favre's interview after the game, I don't know if you saw that. It was the first time this season that Brett Favre actually questioned his decision to come back. And, you know, Green Bay is 1-5 at home in Lambeau Field. You know, the one stadium when you're like, oh, the Pack, they're at home, they're in Lambeau, forget about it. You know, it's been the other way this year. And he really saw it take its toll on Favre this week when, you know, he literally said, you know, you're so used to doing certain things with this organization of the Packers and the Super Bowls they won, and you know, just used to winning at home. And I think that's really starting to kind of get to them, the fact that they've only won one game at home this year and they've lost five.
BJ, I'm telling you, I don't know what the odds are. I'm going to look them up here. Cincinnati to win the whole damn thing. I think they can do it. I think Cincinnati can win the Super Bowl.
You think they can get out of the AFC with the Chargers, the Colts, the Patriots? I mean, they're going to have to beat two of those teams, and they're going to have to beat them on the road.
Well, they're going to have to beat three of those teams because they're not getting
there. Well, ideally, potentially.
Yeah.
The way that it shakes down is, you know, if those are the top three teams, you don't end up playing all three of them.
No.
You're going to have to play two, but.
No, they're going to have to win their wild card. They're going to have to go on the road and beat the Pats, Ravens, Colts, or Chargers. And then they're going to have to go play a home field advantage team in the second round and then a home field advantage team in the third round. I think they could do it. I think Carson Palmer's that good. I like the Bengals.
Okay.
I like the Bengals. Are they
going to your action?
So I think they'll cover the 11 versus Oakland this weekend. You?
Yeah, I do too. I think they're really rolling, and they're going to want to make a big statement. I actually took Oakland this week, figuring that, you know, the offensive coordinator who has been, you know, so busy running his bed and breakfast for the last 5 years.
Who's this?
That getting rid of him, and the Raiders have nothing to lose. They have nothing to play for, and with Lamont Jordan out for the season, if I'm the Oakland Raiders, I'm giving the ball to Aaron Brooks, And I'm saying, throw it down the field to Randy Moss 40 times in this game, because Randy Moss is probably going to catch five of them. And they didn't do that. I mean, I don't understand it. I don't see how Art Schell can keep his job there. I mean, that team is a joke. You know, their defense is fucking really playing well, and they have Aaron Brooks and Randy Moss, and they're still not going downfield. So, you know, I look at Cincinnati to come in and really just knock the crap out of Oakland. I agree with you. It's a big number. I think they'll cover it.
I could see a 20-point win here in that one.
Yeah, I agree.
San Diego, LT, it is so routine with this guy. 178 yards on the ground, two more touchdowns from LaDainian Tomlinson. Didn't throw one this week, didn't throw a touchdown. They had a squeak out of win, 24-21 win versus Buffalo. I think this guy's the MVP this year.
I don't think there's a question.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you can give him the award right now.
He wins games for his team.
Yeah, well, absolutely. There's no doubt. Now that game was actually my best bet of the week. San Diego going into Buffalo and going into the cold, and you know, in their home stadium.
They didn't cover.
I thought they'd win six. Seemed like way too many points to me.
Yeah.
You know, the Chargers are playing great football, but you know, the thing about the Chargers, and especially from a wagering perspective, is Marty Schottenheimer's the coach. It's Marty Ball. And for them to leave a team in the dust and really hang a lot of points on a team, it almost has to be a mistake. Like, they're not going to do that on purpose. They're going to be very conservative. They're going to, you know, use the clock. They're going to run the ball. And they're going to do the little things right to win. And that's Marty Ball, you know. So they're a really tough team to bet on, because you don't know what they're going to do, and you don't know how they're going to put the game away. And kind of on the same lines of that, you know, how did the Colts lose that game to Tennessee?
Is Vince Young a star?
I'll tell you what, he looks really good.
Yeah.
Listen, I said I didn't think that he'd be able to do it at the NFL level. He's playing great. Jeff Fisher has that team really kind of banded together and playing the underdog and the spoiler kind of role, and they're really excelling in it. Well, they won three games in a row. But to me, I've said this many times before, I don't think the Colts are a Super Bowl winning team, and that game to me on Sunday was the exact reason why. They don't have the guts and they don't have the heart. And you know what? Every time, you know, the other team scores in the fourth quarter, they show Peyton Manning and he's throwing stuff and licking his fingers on the sideline. The team doesn't have heart, man. They have no heart. I don't think the Colts are going to do. I don't think they're going to do anything this year. I think, you know, they'll make it to the second round probably with a bye, maybe make it to the finals. I don't think the Colts go to the Super Bowl.
We'll get to that in a second. But how about Tennessee? 5-7. You thought when Vince Young took over, I mean, you actually told me this team was going to lose a game by about 50 points this year. I think you said something along those lines. But Vince Young, we know he's a winner. Pulled out the game versus the Giants last week. Beats the Colts this week. We saw what he did in the Rose Bowl. This is a winning quarterback.
This guy's a gamer.
Yeah. Vince Young.
He's a gamer. Well, and you know what? I think Jeff Fisher saved his job, too. One of the longest-running coaches in the league with the same organization. And he's really showed that he can put this team together, that he may be the guy to give Vince Young the best chance to win, to help progress his development as a professional quarterback. And then there's a lot of talk now about the GM in Tennessee getting the axe, and Fisher actually keeping his job. And they have an option on his contract. I think it's a $5 million option. And there's actually a lot of talk that they're going to re-sign him, and he will be the coach in Tennessee next year.
Before we get to the Colts, BJ, so San Diego playing Denver, the Chargers 7.5-point favorites. I think you go Denver on that one to cover the 7.5.
You know what? Where are they playing?
San Diego.
You know, that's a tough one.
7.5.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, and what about?
I don't really know. And honestly, I haven't looked at the lines yet this week, so I don't really know what I'm going to be doing. I just think that it's almost a game to stay away from, just because, A, the Marty Ball on the San Diego side, you don't know what they're going to do, how many points they're going to put up. And the Broncos are just a total wild card. I mean, you have zero idea what these guys are going to do, especially even more so now with Cutler at quarterback. Shanahan's so crazy that, you know, he might come out and not even give Tatum Bell the ball next week. week. So, you know, that's kind of a game that I'm going to shy away from at this point, unless something happens midweek that makes kind of pushes me to bet on it.
So back to the Colts, and then we'll let you go, Beach. Thanks for doing this so much. Is Indianapolis, you don't like them. And my question is, I think personally, if I had first pick overall in like an NFL draft to like put my team together, I don't think you can pass on Peyton Manning with the first pick. But if I had one game to win and my life depended on it, I want Tom Brady as my quarterback. That sort of seems to be what it is.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. You're right. I mean, you know, Manning's unbelievable, and what he does from the quarterback position is incredible. And you know, him and Marvin Harrison hooked up for their 100th touchdown on Sunday, which is, you know, it's some sort of, I don't know if that's the record or the milestone or if somebody's still ahead of them. But you know, I mean, Marvin Harrison's incredible as well. You know, Joseph Addai, you got a lot of talent there, but I don't know, man. I don't see heart. I don't see guts. You see Manning leading, you know, fourth quarter comebacks, but you never really see him doing it like in situations where that are like troublesome, you know, on the road in the snow or, you know, against like a great team, against like, yeah, the Bears or something. I mean, you see him doing it against like the Miami Dolphins. I'm like, who cares? You know, I mean, half the quarterbacks in the league can do it against the Dolphins. I don't know what it is, man. I don't know if it's Dungy. I don't know if it's just, you know, the mentality there or if they're almost like they're, you know, they're too much of a finesse team. It's weird, man. I mean, it really is. But I mean, do you think they're going to go to the Super Bowl?
No, I got Cincinnati. if it's not the Bengals, though, I like San Diego. They're winning, and you know what? Baltimore. I'd rather have Baltimore. Steve McNair's a winner. I've seen them pull out games this year. Baltimore,
right.
But I like Cincinnati and San Diego to play in the AFC Championship game this year.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You agree with Cincinnati, San Diego?
Well, I agree with the fact of, you know, San Diego, yeah. Baltimore. I mean, these are teams that I have a little bit more faith in the Colts. Definitely San Diego. I think, you know, Baltimore gets a little bit tricky just because, you know, they don't do things as well on offense. You know, we talked about McNair and the leader. He does what it needs to win. But, you know, I mean, you see them make some pretty pivotal mistakes and be unable to move the ball in situations where they needed to. But, you know, I don't see it, man. I just don't see it gelling. And then the question becomes, well, you know, how long do you stick with this infrastructure that, you know, that Indy has? I mean, when do you make a change?
No, you don't. You ride this out. This is Peyton Manning's team, and they have been so close. And this is also a team, BJ, the Colts, that if they do, in fact, win it this year, and say they do get over that hump, you could look up and they've won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years. And that's just how it is. They just might have to get, you know?
Well, and see, that I definitely don't see. I mean, I don't ever see them being a dynasty. I mean, if they happen to, you know, catch a few breaks and you know, God forbid, they win the Super Bowl, they win the big one, there's no way they repeat. No way.
Awesome. All right, Beach, thanks a bundle.
That's it?
Yeah, dude, we got to move on here.
Okay.
That was quite a while, actually.
All right, I dig it.
That was quite a while. What are you doing tonight?
What's the line in the Browns game?
Cleveland? I love Cleveland. I like Cleveland. Oh, they're 7.5. Pittsburgh's favorite.
I'll tell you what. I don't know. I haven't looked at the papers here, the, you know, internet today. I don't know how Charlie Fry's MRI came back, but I will tell you that if Derek Anderson is starting at quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, I think I bet on the Browns.
You like them, eh?
I look for them to win outright.
You like Cleveland. You like that Anderson guy, eh?
You know what? The way he led that team back, you know, football's a weird game, and those are one of those things. You know, there's that big third down or fourth down where he just ran the ball himself and then knocked over 3 guys and took a 15 more yards than he even needed. You know, that's the kind of thing that makes guys in the locker room say, God damn, you know? And it's one of those things where it just comes together. And, you know, Cleveland doesn't have much to play for, neither does Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh always plays better on the road than they do at home. You know, I think that Cleveland could have, you know, enough belief in this kid to make it happen. But then again, you know, this is also a guy who's never started an NFL game. So, yeah.
It just hit me right now, for the first time in my 6 years with my fantasy football team, I think it's 6 years, I no longer have any major affiliation with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I dropped their defense, which was mine for about 2 or 3 years, and I just traded Ben Roethlisberger after about 2.5 years. Over 2.5 years. I no longer have an affiliation with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Well, at least you have Ruben Drones.
You like him. You lost a big game last week.
Yes, I did, my friend.
You would have been right in the mix there, BJ.
Sorry.
Who let you down?
Next year.
Who let you down?
I played the wrong combination. D'Angelo Williams, if I would have played him. But then again, thanks to some archaic commissioner I have, I couldn't decide who I was playing on Monday before Tuesday. So, what are you going to do?
Well, just as long as I can be your scapegoat, that's always good. Did you like my trade, though, getting a high draft pick and Santana Moss for Ben Roethlisberger?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. I like Roethlisberger, just so you know that. But I think my Roethlisberger-Vic combination, I had to break that up at some point, eh?
Dude, listen, I don't know. Obviously, the guy won a Super Bowl, so,
Yeah, and
how much can you really rag on the guy?
But as far as
a fantasy perspective, there's a lot better stuff out there. You don't get points, or you don't get, a win in your fantasy football team because the team wins the game. And Roethlisberger found ways for Pittsburgh to win the games they needed to win. But he never put stats up. And so, in a fantasy football perspective, what good is he?
He's in year three, and he's putting up better numbers this season. So I think he'll be half decent. But I don't have him anymore, so it doesn't matter. I don't have him anymore. All right, BJ. Thanks a lot,
BJ.
Thank you. Talk to you
soon. Thanks, Winter.
All right, we are going to take another break here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. You are listening to Wiener's Barbecue. We will be right back in a moment.
Out tonight in the mystic garden, the wounded flowers were dangling from the vine. I was passing by a young cool crystal fountain. Someone hit me from behind. Ain't talking, just walking through this weary world. Say prayer has the power to heal, so pray for the mother. In the human heart, an evil spirit can dwell. I'm trying to love my neighbor and do good unto others. But oh mother, things ain't going well. You've lost. Now I'm all worn down by weeping. My eyes are filled with tears, my lips are dry. If I catch my opponents ever sleeping, I'll just slaughter them where they lie. Ain't talking, just walking. Through the cities of the plague. While the whole
someday you'll be glad to have me around. Outback at the world's end.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Wieners Barbecue on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. A little more music than normal today. I had a guest cancel, which is always fine in the middle of the show. So as opposed to me talking for a good solid half hour more, I just decided to change things up there a little midstream, and yeah, that's really what I decided to do there. So hopefully you enjoyed listening to that more than you do listening to me. So there you have it. All right. We're almost done here. Eric LeFlusher Head is going to be on after me in about 4 or 5 minutes' time. And once again, we have no more UBC Thunderbird sporting broadcasts during the year on 101.9 FM CITR Radio. We are, however, going to be, I think, see, I don't even know yet, so we'll try to keep you guys updated if you care. We are going to be looking into doing some games on Friday nights. We do sports here every Friday nights from 6 to 10, I think is the slot. And we are going to be seeing if we can find some events around the city that we can do some stuff on. Okay, that is it for me. I'd like to thank all my guests for participating in the today's show. Milan Dragicevic, head coach of the UBC Thunderbird men's hockey team, fresh off a split versus Lethbridge on the weekend. And BJ Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas. Always fun. We talked a little football talk. Okay, Eric Fletcher Head will be on in a short period of time. You are listening to 101.9 FM. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody.
Spirit on the water.